It's Eben again, back with another quick intro for, I think, the last of our catch-up episodes. This one is, I think, mislabeled as 54, but is actually number 56. This is kind of a free-for-all, lots of laughs, talking about all the stuff we've been working on, kind of just coming out of Thanksgiving. We're having a very good time, so I hope you guys enjoy this one as well. Topics include a lot of catch-up, talking about raising squirrels for fun and sport, the journey to our Ascension series, pushing the boundaries of the yarn format, post-production adventures and color correction, and discovering the LUT, as well as what that stands for. We talk about Adam's last day of filming on Black Monday and moving into his next show, which he's currently working on, his working with Paul Scheer and Paul's response to Macroverse. We talk about post-Thanksgiving turkey carcasses and how they become zombies in Dead Town. And I recount a little of my own history in drawing from corpses. So stay tuned and enjoy.
Hello.
Right.
Good evening.
Good evening.
What time is it? 10:45?
Yes.
LA time?
LA time. Lovely. On this beautiful December 2nd.
Indeed.
Yes. So welcome back to Mythmakers.
Yes, indeed. Adam. You too. Evan, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good.
So this is a show all about storytelling, the process, people, and power of story. I am Eben Matthews.
I am Adam Martin.
And we are M2. Together we have over 40 years of experience collectively developing, creating, and delivering content across a wide variety of media.
Yes.
And continuing to do so.
Indeed.
So I think this particular episode is sort of a catch-up and a smorgasbord of things to chat about.
A smorgasbord?
A smorgasbord.
This is very Swedish in there, suddenly.
what is it? Berk-de-berk-de-berk?
Who was that? Beaker?
Swedish Chef? Swedish Chef?
No, was it Swedish?
Well, Beaker is like...
Oh, yes.
And the Swedish Chef is like...
Yes, good. Just play the stereotype here for a second.
Our Muppet knowledge, which is probably all wrong here.
Yes.
But, so I'm going to... This is now a story that I've told a few times, but I'm going to start off with this most amusing moment for me of the day so far. So I'm hanging out with my daughter this morning and my son as well, but my daughter and we're playing, and this morning she goes, "Hey, there's this huge squirrel outside." And I go, "Oh, really cool. Let's go check it out." So we go look out the window, and yes, there is definitely a huge squirrel outside trying to steal bird food.
Not a possum.
Not a possum.
Because that was the first thing I went to us. When Oswald was like, "Hey, there's a huge squirrel outside." I was like, "Oh, she means like a gigantic rodent." I mean, are you?
We have seen those in the backyard as well before at night. But no, this time it was actually a squirrel. Now, as a total side note, I saw this video yesterday or a couple of days ago, which was people trying to keep the squirrels from eating their bird food, their bird feeders.
Interesting, okay.
And so they had taken oil or grease and put it on the pole.
Oh, that's amazing.
The bird food. And so the video is the squirrel like taking like a bunch of steps up the pole and then sliding down and then trying to jump back up and then sliding down. It was very funny. But that was not what happened here.
No.
So we see the squirrel and I go, "Oh, hey, sweetie, do you know that I used to raise squirrels when I was a kid, when I was younger?" And she goes, "You did?" And I was like, "Yeah, when I was like 12 or 13, I got these squirrels that I would raise and then release them back into the forest." And she goes, "Who won?" And it took me a minute to realize, like, she thought I said race squirrels. And so, of course, you know, the answer to that question is, well, I did, of course. But just made my morning.
That's great.
So,
We had a squirrel thing happen with us. There's a squirrel shrine on our set right now for Black Monday because one of the drivers accidentally ran over a squirrel who was then accused of doing it deliberately. So as we and like there was this little like there's a picture of a squirrel and there's all these flowers and candles that have grown up around the squirrel shrine.
Which is very funny. And why there is not a picture of that on our Instagram account?
There will be soon.
There should be. Very funny. Very, very funny. So, yeah. So for anyone that wants to know the reality of that story. So when I was probably 12, 13,
My mom had a good friend who was a veterinarian, and occasionally she would get these kind of squirrel pups, I suppose, or, you know, squirrel babies that would be abandoned. Because I guess if a...
Is it called a pup?
I think it might be called a pup, but whatever it is, a baby squirrel. So if they fall out of the nest, apparently the parent squirrel will not take them back. Occasionally our friend who was a veterinarian would have these baby squirrels that were essentially abandoned and would certainly, you know, perish without intervention. And so I don't know how this happened to be something that would come to us, but we, you know, ended up raising probably 6 or 8, you know, baby squirrels over the course of
a few years.
For food.
Yeah, of course.
Raise them, eat them. That's right. Oh, you look delicious. So we would raise them.
Sorry about that.
We would raise them to, you know, whatever level of maturity they needed to be to survive in the forest, and then we would go and release them. And so I had squirrel cages and it would, you know, feed them and take care of them. And there was a point where I remember where, you know, I would like put my arms out and then let the squirrel like run all over me as if I was a tree, which was kind of fun.
That's very cool.
And then I do remember these kind of sad moments when we would take them into the forest to release them. And you would have, at least I, as a kind of 12, 13 year old, would have this expectation of like, oh, I've raised this baby. Like, there's going to be some sort of emotional,
goodbye,
you know, thing.
Right.
But no, you no. like put the squirrel in the middle of the forest. Like, there's a bunch of trees around, and it was just like, pew, like never to be seen again. But, you know, it did feel good to have saved these baby squirrels. What is your squirrel story?
Oh, so no, it's anecdotal, but it's so my wife Miata, her family is from Nigeria, and they would have, so her dad came across from Nigeria, and then she was born and raised here, but they had cousins from Nigeria coming through and staying with them in New Jersey. And she very clearly remembers, as quite a little girl, I don't know exactly what age, but Nigerian cousins coming, and they would kind of pull up at their house, and there were squirrels around, and the Nigerian cousins leap out of the car, and then chase the squirrels to try and kill them. She was like, what are you doing? And it was, well, we eat them in Nigeria because they're a food supply. It's fine. And she was horrified by the idea of eating the squirrels.
You mean, they're thinking like, why did you bring us out here if not to get get some supper? Yeah. That's very funny.
That's very great.
So I can say I've never eaten squirrel, but...
Me neither, has to be said.
There must be a name for a squirrel.
It's baby squirrel. Baby squirrel. They are called babies.
They're babies. Okay, so. Yes. Thank you, Google.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I don't know what squirrel tastes like. I do know people. I've eaten snake and various other exotic creatures.
You have definitely eaten more things than I have. I think that is a given.
It's just taking a bite out of whatever comes in front of me, basically. I taste it on chop.
Is it good? Sure.
No, it's fine.
Very good. Yes. So moving right along. So the other thing I was thinking of talking about, you know, we've been in heavy post-production on this series. Continue to tease. We do think we have a somewhat official launch date now, the middle of this month. So we'll have more to say about that next week as we confirm that, and hopefully
and actually kind of fun. Announce. I think it's nice to mention. I think, but one of the reasons we've been pushed back is because Jan has this big series running with Marvel now, which is very, very cool.
Yes.
It's great for them, and it's fun to become. It's obviously a fantastic arena to play in.
Yes.
But it's been one of the reasons why we've had to be pushed, nudged back, because for some reason, Marvel takes precedent over us. I don't know why that would possibly be. But anyway.
Yeah, so a bunch, actually, there's four Marvel series that have launched on Yarn at this point, which are all kind of fun. So definitely, if you're on the platform, check that out. And if not, then wait for us. so we are looking at a currently scheduled launch date of December 18th, and we'll confirm that in the next episode as well as we finalize that this week. But part of the post-production work that we've been doing this week in finalizing the videos and pieces that we've been putting together is also creating a bunch of UI. So UI means user interface.
Yep.
In the world of Yarn, everything is taking place via one's phone. So if we haven't explained this, or even if we have, you know, so basically these stories are delivered in a sort of text message, you know, kind of convention. So it's as if you're eavesdropping on, or, you know, kind of watching different characters text each other.
Right.
Which I've come to think of this sort of meta layer for the storytelling. So it both kind of gives you this voyeuristic element. And at the same time, the more I have worked on it, the more I think it also kind of puts you in the seat of the character, so to speak.
Yes.
So it's almost as if you become the character that you're kind of seeing this unfold in the point of view of.
Right. And I think that's obviously something that gets used across media. I mean, mm-hmm. the traditional media as well. You know, you get whoever your protagonist is, you end up seeing events unfold through their eyes.
Through their eyes, yeah.
And that perspective shifts, obviously, depending on who that is and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So you look, you know, looking back at movies, and to kind of, obviously, you know, we're very used to, and rightly so, looking at kind of World War II from the Western perspective.
Yes.
And yet you look back at, there are two films coming to mind. One is All Quiet on the Western Front, mm-hmm. and the other is Das Boot.
Yes.
Both of which are told from the German perspective.
Yes.
I actually may have got that wrong in terms of All Quiet. That might be a World War I, not World War II. Mm-hmm. Although Western Front, I actually think is World War II, has to be World War II. Anyway, you know, despite the fact that kind of Germans are universally the villains of these stories, I mean, for very good reason.
Yes.
You know, when you watch films where the protagonists are German, you end up sympathizing with them. So in Das Boot, you have your German U-boat being hunted by Allied ships. And that is, you know, there was a... They're, you know, by and large, obviously, we're on the side of the Allies. But it's fascinating seeing that perspective shift, and your sympathies and your attention, you're kind of hoping that these people that you've come to know and like survive. And I do think it's interesting that the Yarn platform puts you very kind of much front and center in the shoes of this person.
Protagonist, yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, very much so. And so, you know, one of the things that we've tried to push the envelope on in the stuff that we've been making for them is, you know, trying to really, you know, think about, you know, how can we utilize this format, the phone, you know, interface as, you know, a storytelling, you know, platform, or as a vehicle for, you know, delivering emotion and, you know, kind of perspective in a way that is, you know, kind of deeper or, you know, more interesting than just, you know, texting and videos. And
yes.
So one of the things that we've landed on in a few of these is, you know, creating user interface experiences within these storylines. And so, for example, you know, we have one of our protagonists, you know, doing a video diary, for example, where she's talking about, you know, what she's, you know, what kind of her emotional state and what she's thinking about, and kind of, you know, following these threads of a particular case that she's, you know, trying to figure out. And then at the end of that video, it transitions into like, oh, this is actually a video that she's recording and then saving into a notes app, for example.
Yep.
And so we're kind of creating our own version of the, you know, Apple Notes, you know, application on the phone that she's then, you know, adding additional, you know, thoughts to, and so scrolling through and adding notes to, or in a different scenario, she's, you know, recording a video and then switching to a podcast that she's listening to. And so it creates this sort of, you know, additional layer of information, both for the viewer and also sort of additional breadcrumb for kind of like, what is this character engaged with or doing, you know, in the sequence. And so it's been fun to kind of both figure out how to utilize those elements, and then also very practically, you know, creating our own version of these, you know, applications or these UI, UX, you know, pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, kind of in traditional, you know, film TV, it's like you can't use, you know, the existing real things.
Right.
You've got to create your own stuff.
Exactly.
And so we've kind of taken that approach as well. So it's been fun, you know, for me, especially with a kind of design UI UX background, to be able to, you know, take the kind of fundamentals of these things that we're very familiar with, whether it's a podcast app or the Notes app, or, you know, even just the FaceTime phone, you know, interface, kind of build our own version of that, animate that all into a place that feels like, oh, someone's actually interacting with yes. this, and then build those into the videos. And I think it creates this extra layer of kind of surprise where we've set up these scenes over a period of time where it's just, you know, more traditional in yarn context, kind of more traditional interactions. Then all of a sudden you get this kind of surprise moment of like, oh, there's something else happening here. Yes. And it's giving me this other piece of information. So that's been very fun and interesting to play with. And, you know, it's been a lot of screenshotting and on my part. I found myself a couple of days ago, you know, FaceTiming myself, like FaceTiming myself from my iPad to my phone to make sure that I had the right pieces in place to have that feel accurate. And then in our last meeting with the producers at Yarn, a question came up. It was like, oh, should there be interface elements on the actual FaceTime calls? And I was like, oh, God, do we need that on there? And so, you know, I went and verified like, oh, actually, no. Like once you get into the call,
right.
like that interface actually goes away. So I think we're OK not having to do that there.
Yes.
So it's, you know, this trying to like find this feeling of being very authentic to, you know, having it feel, you know, like it would be in an actual call, but also serve the story in the best possible way. So it's been kind of a fun exercise in all these various things kind of coming together. And then the other thing, which I, you know, have just recently discovered, is this, you know, we've been doing a lot of color correction, and previously I'd done that with a handful of plugins and things that we have in our editing applications, but then have just discovered this thing called LUTs,
yes.
which Adam was apparently already very familiar with.
Peripherally, but yes.
So I have no idea what that stands for, but the big distinction is that you can color correct footage in a variety of different ways. But the kind of magic of these LUTs is that it actually shifts the color of the pixels in a very specific way. So as I've come to understand it, it's like you're loading in a particular look to, you know, color correct your footage.
Yes.
But rather than, you know, shifting, you know, oh, I'm going to make my shadows a little bit bluer or whatever, you know, it's actually literally applying a actual tonal shift to all of the pixels in the frame or in the scene.
Oh, interesting.
Which I
okay.
found to create a much more naturalistic,
yes,
you know, a shift. And so even though you can get a very dramatic range of feelings or you know, kind of shifting day for night or those sorts of things,
mm-hmm.
It feels more natural, you know,
yes.
using that process.
Right. It's funny because the I didn't actually realize that was the technology behind it. Mm-hmm. I've experienced LUTs a number of times on the various shows I've done,
mm-hmm.
where it is we're shooting a flashback or a period piece or whatever,
yeah.
and they're just designing the look of that time period,
yes,
and based using a LUT to achieve that
mm-hmm.
look. And yes, I have no idea what it stands for.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah.
but yeah,
lovely. Whatever.
Utopian technology. There we go.
There we go. Lovely utopian technology. We'll just name it here officially. So,
very
you know,
funny.
For anyone that's doing post and editing and looking at color correction, you know, what I found was a handful of plugins, and I'll put this in the show notes, but it's from Pixel Film Studios, which we've used for a bunch of different things. And, they have a handful of different LUT, you know, kind of bundles. And so, you know, we got one that was horror oriented and we got
mm-hmm.
one that was specifically day for night, since there's a bunch of day for night stuff that we're doing. Got one that's, you know, kind of a bunch of different film looks. So one of the things that's cool is like, you know, there's one of those packages that we picked up, which, you know, has like, oh, we want this to look like, you know, Kodak from 1984. And right, so that's exactly. a great starting point to then be able to, you know, apply in some cases a few different layers to get exactly the look that you want.
Right. What it stands for look up training.
Oh, there you go. What?
Apparently. What? I know. No, look up table.
There
look
we go. Table. Look up table. Okay, yes, that there makes we go. More sense. Yes. So, you know, I found that to be, you know, just again, just a much more naturalistic way to achieve the kind of look and feel that we, you know, have found, you know, to kind works of work with, the best exactly, yeah. in this stuff. And what's also been interesting is, you know, because so many of these scenes are in a kind of FaceTime format, that means you've got, you know, one character in the sort of big portion of the screen and another character in the kind of smaller picture-in-picture window.
Yep.
And so one of the things that this has been very effective in doing as well is, you know, thinking about, okay, you know, getting the right amount of contrast between those two windows. So it's like, you know, even if they're both happening at the same time of day, like finding a slight shift in the color between the two scenarios so that it feels like, you know, something that's more obviously distinct and yes. easier to then parse as a viewer, you know, seeing those two things play on top of each other. So definitely been both a good shortcut, but also a good way to achieve the exact kind of look and feel
yes.
Of that's the footage great. That we've been putting together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, so a couple of quick tips there. And then,
very cool
and
indeed.
Then you, yeah. sir, are about to head into your last day of shooting.
Filming on Black Monday.
Yes.
And very sadly, I have to miss the, I have actually, it's my last day, but I have to miss the actual last day because it... The finale extended by an extra day,
yes.
and I start the next show Tuesday.
Yes.
Having wrapping up
day
tomorrow.
After tomorrow, yeah,
day after tomorrow, which is slightly terrifying. you know, and it's always interesting. It is very much there is a, I think, I mean, there obviously there are many other jobs that are kind of transitory in nature.
Mm.
Film production, especially, I know film production as a whole is very. You know, you get this group of people together for a period of time, be it a few months on a movie, be it several months on a long-running TV show, be it, in this case, we've been running for 3 months on Black Monday. And you kind of form this bond and this unit and this team of people who get this job done. And then it evaporates. And actually, chances are it will not be the same group of people exactly the next time around. And even if it is next time around, it's a year away. And there's always this is kind of... combination of it's always exhausting, it's always tiring, you're always kind of looking forward to being done, and also a genuine sense of sadness at the fact that this thing that existed is not going to exist in 2 days time.
Yeah.
So it's funny, I'm still never quite sure how to process that.
Mm.
But it's been a great show, and it's been a fantastic group of people, and I think it's something really special. I think it has a yes. chance to be really, really good. The trailer is phenomenal.
It really is.
The show is amazing. There's a world in which, obviously firmly touch wood, but, you know, I think it's the kind, it's certainly an Emmy caliber show.
It certainly is.
Don Cheadle is the lead. You really can't go wrong with, cause he's kind of amazing.
Yes.
But it's funny because when you have a kind of star like that at the center of it, it's very easy to forget that the other cast around that are exceptional. And so Andrew Rennell and Regina Hall and Paul Scheer they're spectacular.
Yeah.
And so it's really, it's kind of sad to be wrapping it up, but it's also incredibly exciting to know that, as of... mid-January, I think. January 19th, I believe, is the launch. It'll be up on Showtime and ready to go.
It does look spectacular. And you have a little collection of parting...
Oh, yes, that's very funny. Yes, indeed. So I have a thing. So Friday nights, as long as it's not actually dawn, Friday nights I always get a bottle of champagne. Yeah, Friday night champagne is just a standard thing that yes. I do for whoever wants to come along. And then... I always get a bunch of bottles of kind of wine and champagne and various things for my team and then for the production office support.
Yeah, so cool.
So the PAs and the production coordinators we're starting ghastly, horrendously early tomorrow morning. But, you know, it's nice. I go and I buy stuff and leave it on the desks, and it's just like a nice thank you for everyone for what inevitably is a lot of hard work.
Yes.
And, you know, the show has gone incredibly well, and we've had a lot of fun doing it, but that's because I think it's often, as is often the case, the kind of department heads get the credit for stuff, but you can only do, you're only as good as the team that's behind you.
Yes.
And it's been a great bunch. Really, yeah. Really good. So I'm incredibly excited to get that going. And it's actually, I think mid-January, I think both Future Man season 2 and Black Monday come out within about 5 days of each other.
Yes.
Which is kind of gratifying.
It's very cool.
It's very, very cool indeed. And with lots of billboards all over town for all of them, for both of them. And I think it'll be kind of fun to get both.
Yes.
And seeing as they're both coming out of Point Grey, which is Seth and Evan's company, they're feeling much happier than I am.
Sure. I'm sure they are.
This is very, very cool.
Lots indeed. Of good stuff happening there. No, yes. Great. No question about
it. It's great. And again, there's kind of, you know, the fun habit of the show, and I think it's always one of those things, the kind of the people you meet that you hope to go on and work with again, and the kind of relationships you form that you know, you're kind of always looking at, oh, what's that project that I could rope people in on, that I can be part of, that we can develop together, that we can do. And we have obviously a number of kind of exciting things going on. And what was particularly gratifying just recently was Paul Scheer. I think, you know, been around for a long time, obviously well-known comedian. How Did This Get Made is his podcast, which is fucking amazing.
Fantastic, yep.
I told him, we were chatting, and I told him about Macroverse, which is our comics app, and he downloaded and read the whole thing and responded incredibly positively to all that, which is great. So that's good. Yeah, that'll be, it's just a kind of fun we've done. He was on Future Man as well, so we've had kind of a couple of shows worth of time to spend together, and he's just a terrific person. And one of those things you feel like, oh, great, you know, we'll have some fun together down the road.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah, it's great.
So cool.
Just great.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, this is not quite the year wrap up yet, but, you know, it's been an interesting year of kind of pushing all of these various balls forward.
Yes.
And, I think 2019 is shaping up to be an even more interesting year.
Lots of things
to come. Yes.
Yep. Most definitely.
So, you know, just kind of moving everything along. I think, we'll definitely have more to say about all of the yarn stuff next week as we have more of that locked into place. We're also, you know, starting to figure out our last couple of shoot days and kind of the last bits of production around all of that. Also starting to shift into thinking about, you know, more of the kind of PR promotion side of all of that, which is of course important. You know, it's also been fun going through and starting to kind of pick out like, oh, this is a trailer scene. This is a trailer scene. And so kind of, you know, pulling those pieces together.
Those images from the trailers. And so, you know, it's been kind of fun with the two. So we're both with Future Man and with Black Monday have both had incredibly good trailers released. Yeah. And a lot of them are these kind of high impact series kind of images, pieces, clips, like very, very short, second and a half, 2 second pieces that are very impactful.
And very much, I think, what we were doing. And I think
very
as
much
what
we were doing. It's we were talking about earlier. We're like, oh, yeah, no, let's use that as a model because it's awesome.
Yes. Because it's awesome is always a good.
It's always good.
It's always a good touch.
And then looking, you know, thinking back through and looking at all the footage that we've shot over the last couple of months, it's like, oh, great, this image, this piece, this clip, this line of dialogue. You know, who could narrate this? Who could do, you know?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It is.
I think
this
speaks very highly to the talent that we were able to kind of drag into this.
Yes.
Quite frankly, and it's been great.
Absolutely. So very excited about all that. In Macroverse and Deadtown news, Steven, our phenomenal Deadtown artist, is hard at work on episode 10 of Deadtown, which is very cool.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw this, but he posted on Instagram a new zombie that he was working on for us.
Ooh.
And it made me laugh a little bit because we are just a little bit post Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And I swear there's some turkey carcass.
This is one of those things. So last year we had this conversation with Stephen where he was talking about, he was apparently shooting photo, you know, he does this like photo reference that he then draws everything, but he uses it as a lot of referencing and maybe like images and whatever else. And he was all went, oh, his turkey carcass last year was was very directly
particularly zombie-esque.
Exactly.
Yeah, so if you see the zombie in episode 10, look for some turkey carcass because I'm pretty sure it's in there.
I would not bet against that.
Fun. Yes, exactly. So we'll have a turkey carcass contest or something at some point. Send us your turkey carcass and make it a zombie.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know about not. Let's say pictures of your turkey carcass.
No, don't send us your turkey carcass.
No matter what, do not send us your turkey carcass.
So rent a carcass?
Yes, rentacarcass.com. I don't know. That sounds
awful.
Never mind.
Yes. Like a med students unlimited. Yes.
Now, actually, do you know when I was in art school, I took a so RISD and as you know, Rhode Island School of Design. Mm. Brown University is also in Rhode Island.
Okay,
and Brown has a very Brown has a pretty good medical school.
Yes,
and so I was one of a handful of RISD students that took a I don't know what the exact term would be, but I guess sort of a swap or a, I don't know where you I don't know how to describe this, but it's like you know you can take a class at Brown or Brown students could take classes at RISD.
That's so cool. Okay.
You know, in a sort of exchange, you know, sort of a thing. So
yes.
One session I took a anatomy class at Brown in the medical school.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And so it was, you know, it was art oriented, but it was literally in the medical department, like looking at cadavers and drawing cadavers and,
oh, and wow. That must have been fascinating.
Very fascinating. And so, you know, the thing that I remember the most, which is a little bit creepy, but also was just very cool.
Yes.
Is like, you know, being in the morgue area in the medical school.
Okay. Yep.
And, of course, you know, we not being medical students did not get access to the, you know, kind of fresh cadavers.
Yes.
Like we were not cutting them apart or anything.
Of course.
But we would get access to the ones that were already cut apart, which is also a little more interesting.
Yes.
And so we'd be doing drawings to kind of understand anatomy. But I remember very clearly this, you know, this moment of, you know, having this cadaver and being able to actually take the hand of this thing, for example, and you could literally grab the tendon, you know, that's been kind of dissected. So the skin is off and you're at the sort of muscle tendon layer.
Yep.
So you can literally grab the tendon in this cadaver's hand and like, you know, pull it and see how the fingers would move and those sorts of things.
It's very cool.
Very kind of cool, creepy kind of thing.
Yes.
And then just to make it extra creepier, you know, that this was this one had been very dissected by the medical students.
Yes.
And so it had this kind of covering over the head. And so of course, you know, when no one was looking, we very mistakenly peeked under the covering and this thing's head had been like entirely just taken apart.
Yes.
Which is horrific in and of its own. But yeah, just very fascinating experience. It's also, you know, for those of you who are particularly squeamish, you might want to fast forward for 30 or 40 seconds here. But we also had the teacher of that class, we did a live dissection of a rabbit.
Interesting.
So literally like brought in a live rabbit and then killed it and dissected it.
Good God.
In front of the class.
Wow.
Which was particularly horrifying, but also fascinating in its own right. So, very interesting experience in art school.
Yes. We had, it's funny. So my girlfriend at university and my closest friend at university were both medics.
Yeah.
And so they would, it was very funny. I remember very clearly the first time they got to start dissecting a cadaver.
Yeah.
And it was the rapidity with which they went from being squeamish and oh God, this is a body and we have to be to chasing each other around the room with eyeballs was incredible. It was like, wait a second, it was about a week and a half, I think.
I mean, I
where
think
they stopped seeing
right.
this
yeah.
as a former person
yeah, yeah.
and started seeing this as a chunk of meat with yes. which they were kind of experimenting on
yes.
and playing with was kind of amazing. Also, I was listening to a podcast recently. It's a podcast called The Dollop that I'm a huge fan of, but they did one on the original like medical schools.
Mm.
And because there was a belief in Christian, obviously, with, in, you know, obviously, Christian influence in the original early colonies in North America, and the idea, early Christian idea, that there was bodily reincarnation, mm. Not reincarnation, bodily resurrection,
yes.
right? Therefore, they didn't want their bodies to be cut up mm. after death, because mm-hmm. they were gonna, otherwise they'd be missing like a limb, whatever.
Right.
And so there was a whole massive black market in what was called resurrection men, who would go and dig up fresh corpses and deliver them to medical schools to be experimented on, and all these elaborate ways in which people would then protect the graveyards and hire guards to guard graveyards
oh, wow.
to
yeah.
prevent people from digging up. Therefore,
amazing. That is amazing.
Anyway, it was just very
yes.
funny. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
fun with cadavers. It is funny. I mean, that is very much, I mean, different, but very much my experience too, is that, you know, kind of the first week of
digging up bodies?
Well, yeah, you know, of course. But beyond
drunk
that,
in a weekend,
yeah.
graveyard. What are you
gonna
do? I got a shovel.
Do? It's Saturday night. What are we gonna do? I've got a shovel, you got some time. You look out, I'll dig. I'm tired of digging, you dig. But no, but very much that process of going from like, oh my God, like this was a person
yes.
to yes, like now can we move their hands around?
Right. Of course.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. very, very interesting. I will definitely never forget that, those moments.
I'm sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So Adam, what is a Hujama flip again?
You know, the Hujama flip is just whatever is top of mind, basically. Yeah. It's just whatever happens to be, floating around the conscious consciousness at the moment.
The British
yes.
whatchamacallit as
a
idea.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. What would you say yours is?
So as always, I am going to claim more than one, but top of mind is a movie that I just watched a couple of days ago called Searching,
mm-hmm.
And I claim it as a research project as well as an entertainment.
Whatever you need to justify it, it's fine.
It's very much how I need to justify it. So Searching is a film that came out earlier this year, and I'm so. Feel remorseful that I am not thinking of the actor's name, but stars the Harold of Harold and Kumar, which is not probably how he wants to be thought of at the moment. Adam is going to look it up for me.
Mm-hmm.
But very, very good movie, and also very relevant to
David
the stuff.
Kim?
Yes, thank you. David
you
Kim stars. And it's very relevant to what we've been doing with yarn, in that the entire movie is portrayed through screens, essentially. So the storytelling all takes place kind of via, you know, kind of this main character's computer and phone. And it's delivered, basically his daughter gets kidnapped, and so he's trying to, or goes missing, rather, and he's trying to figure out, you know, why did she go missing, what happened, and that leads to an exploration of, like, you know, oh, you know, I didn't actually know a lot of the things that she was going through, and so, you know, kind of searching through social media profiles and, you know, getting in contact with her friends and, you know, getting into FaceTime calls and you know, searching through her photo albums and those sorts of mm-hmm. things, trying to find clues to, like, you know, how, what happened and how did this happen? You know, a detective, you know, gets assigned to the case. And so it's this, you know, basically asks him, like, you know, can you, you know, anything that you can find, you know, let me know. And so he goes on this kind of, you know, quest, you know, searching through all this information to try to find and put together, you know, what has happened. And so it's very well made and very well done. And I heard a podcast where they were talking to him and the director about, you know, making the film. And apparently it was a little bit of a challenge to, first of all, get him to sign on because it's such a weird, you know, kind of way of telling the story.
Of course, yep.
But then also, you know, once they did get into it, you know, they were talking about, you know, like this is the equivalent, in a weird way, the equivalent of acting against a ball on a stick,
yep.
In that, you know, all of this stuff was put together in post. So you've got, you know, one actor sitting in front of a computer monitor with nothing on the monitor, having to deliver, you know, this performance, and then in post them figuring out, you know, what, how to build all this interface and how to build all these interactions. And, you know, one of the things I thought was, you know, very artfully done in the film, but also, again, very relevant to the work that we've been doing, is, you know, how they direct the viewer's eye to things that are important in what's being looked at or what's being gone through. And also, you know, the way that they were able to move between different sorts of interfaces to tell different pieces of the story, or like, you know, when you go from his computer to the daughter's computer and how do you do that transition? One of the brilliant moments, which I thought, you know, also being sort of a geek for, you know, this kind of stuff. If you remember in classic Macs in particular, but I think this still exists, but especially in kind of slightly older Macs, the screensaver would come on with the kind of swirly, rainbowy,
yes.
Kind of,
yes.
You know, almost jellyfishy kind of thing, you know,
yes.
Roaming around the screen. So there's this moment after the first day where he goes to sleep and all of a sudden, like, the entire, you know, movie screen is taken up by this, you know, kind of screensaver type of thing.
Huh.
And while he's asleep, this thing is going and you see these notifications start to pop up in the corner of like someone trying to get a hold of him, or like at that point, actually it's his daughter trying to get a hold of him, but he's asleep and misses the calls.
Hmm.
And so then he wakes up and then he comes back to the computer and turns it on. And so then you see him in the camera again, but just this sort of very, you know, kind
interesting
of artfully,
of
you know,
yes.
Kind of brilliantly put together way of, you know, utilizing all these different elements to tell the story. So definitely recommended, and also, you know, just a very unique, you know, way of telling a very compelling story.
Yes.
So very cool. And then secondly, we just watched.
I'm going to claim like five of these things now. All right.
Secondly, we just watched a bit of Lord of the Rings this evening.
Yes.
And it's
director's cut.
Of course, the extended editions, the only editions worth watching. I pretend the other ones don't even exist.
Yep.
But
As great as they were.
But it just reminded me how flawless those films are. And it's been years since I've actually sat down and watched them. And it's really, speaking of top of mind, it's like all I want to do is go home and watch the rest of the trilogy.
It's been on our minds for a while. Having it's the benefit of having older kids is, you know, we revisit movies and we watch obviously a lot of media. And so we're a kind of a media heavy family.
Yeah.
And all three of us be like, we really need to watch Lord of the Rings again.
Yeah.
And we really want to see it. It's been a few years since we've done it.
Yeah.
And so we just started doing Fellowship of the Ring. And
yeah.
I think
we'll
work through that series. Yes.
It's so good. It's funny because I think, you know, part of what makes me want to watch them again as well is, you know, just for me personally being in a different place as a storyteller and content creator.
Yes.
And so just watching what we watched tonight, which is, you know, probably 20, 30 minutes of footage, you know, the sequence at the midpoint of Fellowship where, you know, they're deciding, you know, who's going to take the ring to Mordor.
Yes.
And it just struck me in
the
a way.
Council of Elrond.
The Council of Elrond, yes.
Chapter title, yes.
But it struck me in a way tonight that I'd never had before of just what a masterclass that sequence is in character development. And that in a 5-minute scene, you know everything that you need to know about who these characters are, what motivates them. And it's done in such a character-driven, plot-driven, you know, kind of mix that you both tell the story that you need to tell and learn everything
and
you
need
to know about these characters.
And that is
in a relatively short
period
of time.
It's great,
it's
and it is
brilliantly done,
so well done, and it is it is the first time in that movie, in that series, the first time you meet Legolas and Gimli and Boromir.
Yeah.
And those obviously three major, they were the kind of remaining three major characters.
Yes.
So they pop up, it's kind of well after the first act, it's half of the movie.
Halfway through the movie, and yet
they pop up, and you're absolutely right. You very, very quickly get an idea of who these people are.
Yeah, it's great. just brilliant. And it's, you know, we said while we were watching it, and it, you know, apologies to Peter Jackson, but I think, you know, this is one of these moments where, you know, same thing probably true for George Lucas and many of the people that have created these sort of grand mythologies that we, you know, love, that, you know, it's like... both wonderful and sad that it's like, you know, there's probably no way to top this, you know, achievement, because they're just so masterfully created.
You're just
seeing this group of people, you know, from top to bottom, like firing on all cylinders in just the most amazing way. So it's,
actually, makes you want to go and reread that chapter, because I haven't read Lord of the Rings. I think I read it to Kira when she was little, and she's now 16, and so she was probably 5 or 6 that we were reading that together. And I haven't read it since. And it was interesting because we were just remembering it was actually the first movie I think that she saw pretty much was Lord of the Rings at the age of 3, because she was watching Peppa Pig or whatever the kind of equivalent was, and I got bored. It was like, and she, I had told her the stories already, as I just got, you know, just told the stories, and we sat and watched it, kind of quite heavily edited, obviously, because it was quite scary for a 3-year-old. But I do actually think that was the first movie she saw.
Yeah.
And it holds up as a film. It holds up incredibly well.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because Kyla was noticing some of the visual effects don't work as well as they do now, and I think that's totally legitimate. But it's also such a compelling film that you forget that quickly. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's so good.
So just very, very struck by that this evening. It definitely feels like a need to rewatch.
Oh god, yes.
Yeah.
Well, especially having gone through the first kind of half of the director's edition, now we're into the quest, and so obviously the Balrog is the next big kind of confrontation. The Moria sequence is just incredible. Oh, so good. you know, still slightly regret the fact that Ian McKellen didn't at least get a nomination for Gandalf in that movie, because he's so good. Great stuff.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. And you, sir?
Me. So I, over Thanksgiving, actually got enough quite a few movies for the first time in a long time. Like, I haven't had a chance to watch stuff. So we watched Crazy Rich Asians, which was terrific. And we have the screener if you want.
Oh, yes.
Not please. That I would lend those things out, because we're not allowed to do that.
No.
But if you would like to come here and watch that, maybe you could see it. And then, so we watched Crazy Rich Asians. It was kind of a fun weekend. We were Crazy Rich Asians. Then we watched Wreck-It Ralph, which was great. Yes. And then Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which is the new Coen Brothers movie on Netflix. And then we saw Evan Hansen. I've forgotten the whole title. Something Evan Hansen. Anyway.
Yes.
Tony winning musical that's now touring. That was actually very, very impressive. But the big one that I took away from was the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. So it's the Coen Brothers movie on Netflix. And it's a series. It's 6 little kind of short stories, basically. And was just incredible and very interesting watching, obviously, because they've always done a very good job of combining kind of black humor and drama and tragedy. But because of the kind of short story aspect of it, without breaking anything, without spoiling anything, you know, the first couple of stories were just riotously funny. Like, laugh out loud multiple times funny, and then took this incredibly tragic turn.
Yes.
And then kind of shifted again tonally a few times. Just really impressive and kind of a masterclass in the comedy and in again kind of comedy in going against expectations, so kind of playing into the stereotypes of the Western, but then playing against it, and then flipping it on its head, And they also had this wonderful technique, whatever, tool of, because they were presented as chapters of a book, you actually, they are turning the pages of a book to bookend each sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to kind of quickly read the first few sentences of the chapter to get the setup for the story. And then each story actually doesn't quite finish. You have to then rapidly read the last few sentences on screen before they turn the page to kind of complete the story.
And
there's one story in particular when you see it where the kind of ending sentence just is devastatingly painful given what you've just seen. It's just utterly gutting.
Oh, wow.
But just brilliant. Yeah. It's just exceptionally good filmmaking.
Yeah.
And actually great to see a new take on Westerns. And I've always been a fan of Westerns. The spaghetti Westerns especially, but I think High Plains Drifter, I think, doesn't quite count as a spaghetti Western, but obviously Clint Eastwood.
It's so good.
But it's so good. And then Outlaw Josie Wales, both of those directed by Clint. But very much the kind of gritty, grungy Western, and yet this has a surreal aspect in some ways, and then this, one of them's a musical, that makes me
even more excited to see it.
And also, because it is a series of vignettes, you don't actually have to watch it. I think as with any movie, there's a reason to watch it as a whole. Mm-hmm. But if you're busy, you can get away with watching kind of two 20-minute or one 20-minute story at a time.
Yeah. See, that's great. That's the reason I haven't sat down and watched it yet, is I want to be able to just sit.
Yes.
And watch it. But
definitely.
But being able to take it in chunks will make that a little bit easier right now. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's so great.
Cool.
Great stuff.
Very cool. So, that is out on Netflix right now. Very cool.
It's actually in the coming to the theaters, or it's in the theaters right now.
It is, isn't it?
They're doing a limited theatrical release.
And Roma as well.
Yes, Roma.
This is supposed to be amazing.
Yep.
Very much so. So cool. Well, I am very much looking forward to watching that as well. And then we have a segment that we've been doing on the show called hashtag make stuff.
Yes.
And so while this is not normally we highlight something that you might not know about or is not, kind of as well known as this one will be.
Yep.
But, just in reverence to the appreciation of Paul Scheer enjoying what we've been doing. It is worth mentioning, again, his podcast called How Did This Get Made?
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite podcasts. It is something that I look forward to just about every week.
Yep.
And every single episode that I've heard has been fantastic.
Oh, God, it's great.
And so if you're not familiar with How Did This Get Made, first of all, what's wrong with you?
Yes.
And secondly, go subscribe to it right now.
Yep.
But what they do is it's Paul Scheer, his wife, often his wife, June Raphael.
Yep.
And then also Jason Mantzoukas, who is also hilarious. And then they typically have a guest comedian, who come on. And basically they take bad movies and then just talk about what the hell?
Just kind of eviscerate them.
And it's hilarious.
It's also this wonderful combination, which I love about this. It's this combination of just very funny, spur of the moment kind of stand-up comedy, eviscerating bad movies.
Yes.
But also it also manages to straddle that line of also being educational in terms of why is this a bad film? What makes it bad?
Yes.
And therefore you can kind of, elaborate what would make a good film why a good film works.
Yes.
And it's great.
It's a great combination of genuinely funny and also very insightful the creative process and storytelling.
It's one of the intelligent filmmakers who have been around the film industry for a long time talking about in a yes. way, talking about what they do.
Yes.
And it's dope. It's
and then one of my favorite segments is, you know, occasionally June, you know, Paul's wife, who is the, you know, official kind of other co-host, yes. occasionally she is not available for a particular yep. episode. And so one of my favorite segments they'll do is she will have not seen the film, but she'll call in and talk about what she thinks the film is about, having not seen it. And it is always so funny.
Oh, it's great.
So very, I mean, the highest recommendation oh, yeah. for how to.
And also, the I love the Amazon reviews.
Yes, yes.
Of the films. So it's like, yes. okay, we've trashed this film. Now,
who one of the five-star five reviews. Stars?
Yes. It's and that is, it's, no, it's great. It's so great. It's just great.
Yeah.
Well worth
yes.
So listen.
So yes. stop listening to this and go subscribe to that.
Seriously. Yeah. yep.
And if you're still listening to this, subscribe to this. So, so yes, definitely your reviews and ratings for our show
please.
Very well appriated.
Yep. It makes, a huge difference.
Of, yeah. And you can also find us all over social media
at M2Action.
We like to give a shout out to Brandon Weisel, our yep. long-term
collaborator,
who has done the intro and outro for our show. And we will be back next week with more to talk about.
Indeed.
More specific announcements.
We hope with
the YARM stuff that we've been working on, and lots more to come.
Indeed.
Have a fantastic week.
Great week.
Bye.